Thank you, and thank you for the opportunity to present today. Let's just put this in perspective. The ambulance service in South Australia, we have about 3,000 people who work for us, of which about half of those are volunteers. On average, we would carry about 300,000 patients per annum around the state, and on average, probably receive between 1,000 to 1,100 triple zero calls every day in our emergency operations centre. So we're a pretty busy business and an interesting business because you expect us to get it right every time, spot on. So 5 minutes is pretty hard to try and put in context a very complicated health process that we are faced with today. And I'm going to try and give you the flavour of some demographics, and I'm going to try and give you some of our major issues, including around ageing, within this 5 minutes. So just bear with me. This one slide, probably in a minute, I'll show you two of the biggest problems that we have, two of our biggest problems around the state. I don't know if you can read that. This is from the 2016 ABS data. The blue line is the age profile of the metropolitan area, and the other line is the age profile of the country. Where we come into problems is, you can see here, with the two lines closed. So just think about this. In the country, South Australia, our ambulance service in the major regional centres like Mount Gambier, Whyalla, Port Pirie, Murray Bridge and the Riverland has a paid workforce. We have paramedics in all of those communities. In the smaller communities, Tailem Bend, Kapunda, over on the west coast, places like Streaky Bay, Tumby Bay, etc., are staffed by volunteers. Now, you can see our problem here. As the population gets older, who are high-end users of our service, and I'll explain a little bit more about that later, starts to coincide with where we have the least capacity in some of these communities to draw capability from those communities to be part of our volunteer workforce. So this is an issue. This is becoming a major issue. Our emergency workload in the country is rising almost double the rate that it's rising in the metropolitan area. So our response is red lights and sirens is increasing almost double the rate in country areas than it is in the city. And we have less capacity to respond. So that is a major issue for us. What are we doing about that particular issue? Well, we're re-engaging with our volunteer workforce wherever we can. The good news is that our numbers of volunteers in the country are broadly the same. We haven't really increased, we haven't really decreased, but there's a lot of effort going on to maintain that level. You look at the Country Fire Service, for example, they've lost about 4,000 or 5,000 volunteers in the last 20 years. Holding your own is really hard work. But what that masks is the type of person who is a volunteer, and I'll talk about that a little bit later too, but what we are finding is the people who do volunteer are available less time and they're more restrictive in what they do. So where historically a volunteer would start on, you know, when their shift started, they take their pager home, and if they were called in, they'd come in, pick up the ambulance and respond to whatever job we wanted to give them, whether that's an emergency case in their town, or it might be in a town next door to them, or it might be picking up a person who needs to go to an outpatient's appointment in another country hospital. What we're finding now is they're completely restricting to their local emergencies only, and that's usually because the employers won't release them to do the lower effect. They think that's a government problem to bear with. So you can understand the sort of issue here. The future and the way we're working towards a 2030 vision for this issue is working strongly with the country local health networks. This has got to be a partnership because this is also happening at the same time as there is a gradual decline in rural health services in a broad sense. So we've got almost a triple whammy happening here. So the idea is work in collaboration, leverage off each other's resources that we do have, but then also look at technology. Can we have a lesser trained volunteer, but we can get eyes on from one of our high-end medical consultants in our emergency ops centre who can talk them through a case? Can we get bigger, faster helicopters that can go and get people out of hospitals when they're really sick and bring them back to Adelaide? Because the unique demographics of South Australia works well for that type of model. Very, very metro-centric state. There's a whole range of issues there. The second issue that comes up is this little tail at the end, which is the 80 to 85 year old plus. and these are growing. As I said, this is the 2016 census, so it's probably grown even more since then. And these are most of our jobs are related to elderly. So if I give you a rough breakdown, when we take a 000 call, we categorise it into five different categories. The first two categories are red lights and sirens response. Priority one is like usually a cardiac arrest. So we know that we have to be there, you know, right now. Priority twos will be the typical response to a chest pain, a vehicle accident, et cetera, et cetera. Priority three, fours and fives then become urgent but not life threat, and especially down into the fours and fives, the more complex chronic. Now, guess who usually falls into that lower category of three, fours and fives? It's the this emerging patient type that we're seeing, which is 70, 80, 90 years old, often in a residential care facility. They've got complex medical problems. They've got several comorbidities. It is very, very difficult to pick what is actually going on in the day. There might be a primary presentation, but it's usually exacerbated by three or four other conditions that they have. It can be really tricky to try and pick sometimes. And so often they present as chronic as opposed to acute. And those priority three, fours and fives represent 41% of our workload, but they represent 67% of the time ambulances are stuck on a ramp in an emergency department for greater than 30 minutes. Whereas the emergency high acuity cases, sort of intuitive, are 59% of our workload, and they represent 33% of our time on the ramp. So if you think about it, what we're doing is we're the high cluster of those three, fours and fives are elderly. They're sitting in an ambulance for sometimes, we had one case recently in the media, 7 hours before they were treated. They could be sitting in an ED for at least as long as that, if not longer, depending on their condition. I know there is some gerontologists who are experts. I've heard a guy from England who's an expert on, also on patient flow. He actually uses the word that it's actually criminal, because these people in the health system, if they stay there more than 4 days, more than 7 days, there's a high chance they're going to cop a hospital-acquired disease, which for them could be a terminal sentence. So we're doing everything we can. Our current model, the model we use today, is built historically to respond to emergencies. What we're doing is calling this out and say we've got to identify this growing cohort of patients and we've got to do something different. We've got to start to try and get them to alternative pathways other than an ED. Because at the moment, the health system doesn't have a huge lot of alternatives other than an ED. But you've seen some media recently about priority care centres. I know there's some other contracts looking at hospital at home. These things work in other jurisdictions around the country. There's some mental health pathways we're exploring, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it is really imperative for us to call out these particular type of patients and do something different than we're doing now. So just a quick overview. This is our volunteer demographic broken down into age profile from 2011 to current. The significant shift, the most significant shift, is the increase in the younger volunteer. And while that's healthy in one respect, there is a specific reason for this, is because these people, whether they see this as a career employment opportunity, so they volunteer to either get a job for us or to get a job in the health system because it looks good on the CV. Bearing in mind that mostly the best way to get into be a paramedic now is you go through a graduate degree program, and it's very competitive. I think the intake this year was about 100 students were taken on each year. We only, on average, recruit maybe 50 to 60 per year, so there's a gap. So it's actually quite a competitive process. And then at some point, they maybe either get a job or they don't get a job and they walk away. Family stuff comes in, and then they tend to be, when they've got more time on their hands, come back into the workforce in the later years. And because I'm restricted to time, we could explore. There's a whole heap of stuff to explore in this, but also in terms of the male-female breakdown, you can see both male and female in that younger age increased, obviously, but a more significant amount of female, much more significant. And I expect that's because some of them also want to get into a nursing-type background, and the ambulance service is one of those few things you can probably do at a younger age to help you get into the health industry. So I know we've got questions after. We do use demographics a lot around the state. I hope I've expressed some of our risks, and I hope you know there is some work going on to try and address those risks, but this is an ever-changing world, and we've got to constantly keep our eye on what's going on out there with our patient cohort. So I'll hand over now. Thank you very much.